You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Jones! Bowden!
He's got it!
Stokes flashes it away through the covers for four, and England have won the match.
Hello and welcome to the Analyst Inside Cricket. Should we rename this Groundhog Day instead? Because it seems like the same thing's happening time after time in these test matches, certainly the last three anyway. England winning the toss, not batting very well. At least they managed to get over 200 this time, whereas they didn't even get 200 in two innings in the last test at Ahmedabad. But you do fear for their futures with only 205 on the board in India, 24 for one, don't you, Simon?
I've got a question for you, Yoz. Pro rata, was this England's most disappointing batting day of the series? OK, they did get over 200, but they won the toss. Pitch was not too bad at all, actually, for the first day, when you compare it certainly with the last two test matches. So was this England's most disappointing batting day of the series so far?
I think probably you're right about that, actually. I think that they obviously should have made more runs in Chennai and in the first innings in Ahmedabad in the third test. But that pitch was worse, certainly the last test. The ball was exploding off a length, really, from just after lunch, just after the first session anyway. And it was very difficult to bat on that pitch. I mean, England only got 120-odd. They should have got probably 170, maybe. But here, as Ben Stokes, actually, who we'll hear from shortly, he does say that it was a 300 pitch, so England 100 runs short. I mean, it always is a problem when you're 15 for two, isn't it? Especially in the subcontinent, really, where you know the spinners are going to come into it more and more as the day and the pitch wears on. So you've got to make runs, you've got to get a good start, and you can allow one wicket maybe against the new ball, but 15 for two was a disappointing start. And you think about it, if England had made, say, 70 or 80 for two, with one opener gone early and then, you know, the numbers sort of three and four coming in when the score was close to 100, probably England would have got 300.
Yeah, Sibley and Crawley out to Akshar Patel. I mean, neither dismissal really was much to do with the bowler. It was really batsman error. We've seen Crawley go over the top before. He did it against Embledenya in Sri Lanka with the same result. He holed out to deep mid off, and Sibley bowled through the gate via an inside edge. They'll be glad, I think, well, certainly Dom Sibley probably glad to get away from the trial by spin in India. 15 for two, and of course then it was 30 for three. Root was out to the first ball after the drinks break, and actually we talk about spin, but actually Mohammad Siraj played his part with two early wickets, two top order wickets. He got rid of Root. He really did pin him LBW, and then Bairstow LBW as well. That was one of those sort of marginal ones. You could argue that Gill got a marginal one later with Anderson taking the wicket, and Bairstow got a marginal one, sort of just clipping the top of middle stump. At least that one, I suppose, you know, was straight, if you sort of mean. The Gill one was sort of quite leg sideish, but you know, clipping the leg stump. So one for the bowler there for Anderson, and one for Siraj against Bairstow. But you know, Siraj bowled well, and there's something in this pitch. pitch, or there was at the start, for the pace bowlers. And England in this game, they've got Jimmy Anderson and they've got Ben Stokes, who's not actually that well, but a key member of this England side, of course, balances it and was the leading run scorer today. So in a way, you could say, you know, he really stood up and played his part, if he, you know, not feeling well, but still able to tough it out there for 121 balls and 55. But to me, and I'm sure England feel this as well, it feels like a missed opportunity, a really big missed opportunity in this Test match.
Yeah, it is hard, isn't it, when you're having, as you say, a trial by spin. It's worse than, in some ways, it's worse than facing pace bowling, because it feels like an interrogation, you know, with people round the bat and the wicketkeeper very close to you, you know, verbaling all the time, sort of chundering away. And I think another thing about that's difficult about playing spin is you've got less time. Although it's supposed to be slow bowling, you've got less time to correct your mistakes because the ball is pitching closer to you than a faster bowler. So although the ball is coming faster from a faster bowler, it's pitching shorter and you can adjust. But if you make a mistake against spin, the ball's through you. It's only pitching perhaps a yard in front of you. And if you do line it up wrong, there's no chance of really correcting the bat path or getting your leg in a different position or, you know, somehow shifting your weight because everything's happened and it's finished. And I just think that the intensity of playing spin when the ball is turning and there's people round the bat and there's bowlers sort of glaring at you and there's very little time between balls as well to sort of collect your thoughts, the bowler only having a sort of short run-up. So it's really hard work and very demanding.
Yeah, and it does sort of eat away at you probably as well as a batting side if you're having failure after failure and the pitches are quite difficult, and they have been very difficult so far, certainly in that sort of middle two Test matches. I don't know whether you come into the game, you know, in very confident mood, and so what happened today was not inevitable, but it was sort of a result of what's happened before. The ball didn't do as much today. There's no doubt about that. This was a very reasonable first day batting pitch. Mohammad Siraj afterwards said, you know, it's a batting pitch. And I think that's the fear for England from here. Although they've got their highest score since the first innings of the first test, actually it just feels way below. And you can see a scenario from here, I'm sure everybody can see it, you know, of India, and that they did sort of dig in tonight. They, in the final session, they had 12 overs to bat and they scored 24 runs and Jimmy Anderson bowled 5 maidens. But you can see them sort of inexorably putting together a decent first inning score. And if India get the 300 that is considered on this surface to be the par score in the first innings, you know, suddenly you're 100 runs behind on first innings, you're having to bat third, and by the time that happens, then you'd imagine the ball will be spinning far more than it has on the first day. So it from England's perspective, it's quite a gloomy picture. Of course, they could change that round. The game of cricket confounds us all sometimes, doesn't it? And you think it's going to go one way, and then suddenly it goes completely differently another way. We saw that at Headingley. Remember that 2019? I remember saying on the second morning after Australia were bundled out for about 170, whatever it was, in the first innings of that Headingley Test match, the sun was shining at Headingley, the pitch had dried out. What an opportunity for England to bat the day, to get a big lead and to take control of the Test match. Of course, that didn't happen. They were bowled out for under 100, but we know what happened after that. You know, the game turned round again. So you never quite know in the game of cricket what's going to happen. But there's just sort of the way the series is going at the moment, you just sense that. Have that feeling that India are going to get a reasonable, you know, a big enough lead anyway.
What you have to do on these surfaces is get as many balls as possible on the stumps, and even if they're just clipping the stumps. And I think that's where someone like Mohammad Siraj is valuable. I also think Mark Wood would have been useful on this pitch, a skiddier pace bowler, not tall. The taller the bowler, the way the ball sort of sticks in the pitch and doesn't sort of particularly tax the batsman. So Ishant Sharma today wasn't particularly effective, but Siraj sort of bustling to the wicket, hurling them down, the ball sort of skidding off the pitch and getting through the batsman's defences without going over the top of the stumps. Johnny Best, a little bit unlucky maybe, that the one he was given out to was just clipping, but was a good example of the effect of a quickish bowler who can make the ball just dart back at the batsman and threaten the stumps. So I think Wood would have been good on here. And, you know, it's going to be a huge operation for Anderson's going to have to lead the attack. Stokes not that well. Stokes might be effective, actually. He might get some reverse swing. Leach looks OK. Dominic Best started poorly with a no ball and a long hop in his first over. So it's not looking great for England, really. If they don't bowl India out for under 275, they're history, really.
Yeah, well, even if it's 260, that's still a sort of 50-60 run lead. You'd think England possibly back in the game if that happened. I would say for England to have a significant chance in this game, they're going to have to bowl India out for around about their score, or, you know, if you're being really greedy, for under it, you know, under 200. Is that going to happen? Well, it looks long odds against it at the moment. What about Ben Stokes today then? He's had his trials, hasn't he, in this series, mainly against Ravi Chandran Ashwin. It's not just in this series, but he's had his trials against Ravi Chandran Ashwin in the past as well. There was some early chunter involving him and Virat Kohli. Mohammad Siraj afterwards said, you know, he abused me, and Kohli stepped in. I don't actually know how Mohammad Siraj would know necessarily that Stokes had abused him, although you might get it from the body language, because it's my understanding that Abhishek Jhunjhunwala, who was with us today on the Cricket Social on the BBC, said Siraj doesn't speak English. So anyway, there was that altercation, and Siraj said to Kohli, he abused me, and Kohli stepped in, and there was a sort of quite a forthright chat in the middle before lunch early on in Stokes' innings between the two of them. Stokes sort of dug in and made 55. He was actually looking pretty secure, and then he just sort of got out in the way that he's often, it seems, got out in Indian conditions. That it was a straight on, and the straight ball for actually Washington Sundar this time, and Stokes, he didn't even want to review it. Ollie Pope said, come on, you know, I think you should think about it. And Stokes said, no, I'm out. There's no point reviewing this. And he was absolutely right, pinned LBW.
Mm. Same way he was out in the last test, actually, to Ashwin. I think he's got a problem about playing off spin, and, you know, it's clearly borne out by statistics. I think Ashwin's got him 11 times, hasn't he? He doesn't play down the line of the stumps with the bat. He plays sort of outside the line of the stumps, and he keeps his pad inside the line. And it's partly due to this whole DRS thing, with the stumps now being wider in the umpire's imagination, and them giving out batsmen who are padding away the ball when in the olden days they would have said not out, benefit of the doubt and all that, and ball clipping the stumps is given out. You know, this one just slid on with the arm, Stokes playing probably for a little bit of turn and getting pinned LBW, and the ball would have clipped leg, and he knew that, and that's why he didn't review it. Actually, I had an interesting email the other day from a guy who coaches Stokes at the Rajasthan Royals, a guy called Zubin Baracha, who we've had on this show actually in the past, who's a former first-class player in India and a very bright thinker on the game. And he actually alluded to a man who played in the 1770s called Shock White of Reigate, who came out with a bat 2 foot wide and just played straight with this wide bat, and nobody could get him out. And actually,
surprise, surprise!
It caused the introduction of the third stump. In those days, there were only two stumps: an off and a leg stump. And there was nothing in the middle, and so he just put his bat sort of roughly in the middle, this 2 foot wide bat. And as I say, nobody could get him out. Not surprisingly, but what Zubin's point was that, and interestingly, that was exactly 250 years ago, by the way. It was in 1771 when Shock White played this way. And what his point, Zubin's point, was, play down the line of the stumps with your bat. Stop the straight ball from getting you out. If it goes past the edge and outside off, it doesn't matter. You know, it's missed the bat, it's missed the edge, it's missed the wicket. That you're still in. Whereas if you miss the straight one, you're gone, whether you get bowled or LBW. So you've got to use that bat as the first line of defence, play down the line of middle and off, say. And I don't think Stokes always does that, particularly against off spin. It's a technical issue which has caused him a lot of problems.
OK, we said we're going to hear from Ben Stokes. Let's do so now. I spoke to him after today's play.
We're more than capable of scoring, you know, at least 300 or something like that out here. So, yeah, frustrating, but can't dwell on it too much. And it was nice to get a wicket there at the end of the day.
Has it been difficult to sort of put behind you what happened in the previous two test matches, sort of as a collective batting unit?
I mean, we sit down as a group and, you know, we say we get rid of that. They sort of try and put that all behind us, but it is a lot easier said than done. But I think we, early on, it was pretty apparent that we weren't going to get anything like we did on day one in the last test. I felt early on, this morning and this afternoon, it was more the bounce that was an issue rather than the turn here. But as the day got older, the ball started to spin a little bit more. But I think, well, I know overall it's a much better wicket than it was the last game we played here. So, we're just disappointed not to still be better.
Are you doubly frustrated because you got in and weren't able to go on, you personally?
I was very frustrated that I'd spent 2.5 hours, playing for, well, trying to avoid getting out to a straight ball, and then I ended up getting out to a straight ball. So that's what I'm frustrated at.
And physically, how are you? The talk of a stomach upset. Are you fully 100% fit to bowl and field and continue in the game?
I won't go into details, but I've had better days.
And just one final thing from me, Ben. There was some words between you and Virat Kohli early on in your innings. Can you enlighten us on what that was about?
It's two professionals showing that they care about the sport that they love and enjoy playing. A lot gets said these days when two guys seem to come to words out in the middle. Completely nothing untoward, as I hope that's what was seen, because it wasn't. That's just two blokes who care what they do, and two guys who definitely don't back down.
What about England's team selection for this match? They've gone sort of from one extreme to the other. Last game, I know it was a pink ball test match, and they probably afterwards, they admitted it, they thought the ball would do a lot more, and of course the game didn't last very long as well. So it's, in a way, that ploy didn't develop, and there's a lot of spin out there, and it was obviously a spinning pitch, and they left out Don Best. So they went from effectively four seamers and one spinner plus Joe Root in this match to one frontline pace bowler plus Ben Stokes, who is not that well, as he mentioned in that interview there, and two spinners. They sort of look a bit thin on bowling. What happens in a situation like this? Why did that come about? And Dan Lawrence came in at number seven, which is a sort of unusual position for a mainline batsman to be in, really. It happened, Paul Collingwood came in at number seven, of course, in that famous 2005 Ashes Test match. Remember, England lost a bowler and they brought in Paul Collingwood as the replacement for Simon Jones, which obviously is not like for like. They wanted to shore up their batting, strengthen their batting, and it was, they only needed a draw to win the Ashes back in 2005. So what were England's thinking there? Because what was England's thinking there? Because of course they needed to win this game. They need to win this game to level the series. Is that indicative of the way they're thinking? Two spinners can do the job on this surface, plus a bit of Jimmy and possibly a bit of Ben Stokes as well. That's enough. But we need to make the runs to stay in the game. Is that what they were thinking? And if that was what they were thinking, how sensible or flawed is that thinking?
Well, I think it is flawed. I think that the main thing that's flawed is their ability to read pitches, because they got the last one totally wrong. And I think they've got this one wrong. And you're much better off in most situations having a balanced attack. So that is two seamers, two spinners, an all-rounder. That's your ideal. And I don't understand why they didn't pick Best the last test. And they were obviously proved that was a mistake, even though I know Best isn't, the greatest off-spinner. But he, I'm sure, would have taken wickets in the last test match. Joe Root got 5 for 8, for God's sake. So surely Best would have got some wickets. Now they've gone the other way and had really got no seamers. And I think this pitch will reward some good reverse swing. So they have got it wrong. I don't really see the point of having seven batsmen as well, because it's a bit like having six bowlers. You know, always, there's going to be one or two of them who just don't get enough to do. And seven batsmen, Lawrence at seven. I mean, actually, I thought he played well, in fact.
Well, that's the point.
I thought Pope and Lawrence 46. Played really well, but you almost... You've got to rely on the top six to make the runs, and then 7 to 11 to help, obviously. And Ben Foulkes is a very good number seven, I would say. So I didn't quite get that. I think they're going to feel they are a bowler light, especially with a bit of illness around. And I think they're going to feel like the seamers could do a job here, as Mohammed Siraj has already proved. So it's a bit frustrating, and it's born partly out of inability to read pitches, partly out of the availability, Archer not being available, I suppose, for this test match, and also just out of desperation, trying to reverse the oncoming tide, I guess.
Yeah, the situation on Jofra Archer, England confirming during the day's play, not before it, but during the day's play, that he's still got ongoing problems with his sort of elbow injury that he's had, his right elbow and his bowling arm. So he was out of the test match. Chris Wokes, who's in the tour party for the first five test matches, he's come out of the bubble for this game and go back in for white ball cricket later. So this was his time off, so he was out as well. The other options, Stuart Broad, didn't bowl much in the last game, Ollie Stone and Mark Wood. So there were pace bowling options for England, even though they are without Archer and Wokes for this test match. So the options were there, but they chose to go with the seven batsmen.
Yeah, I've got a little word for Pope and Lawrence. So I thought actually played really well. I thought Ollie Pope today countered or, you know, faced up to the problems that Ashwin has caused him by trying to get down the pitch, trying to get outside the line of the off stump, upset the bowler. It earned him a few boundary balls, which he took advantage of. I thought he played pretty well. He's a bit crabby in his stance. He gets a bit too hunched, I think, and he could look with being a bit more relaxed, but that might come with a bit more confidence in these circumstances, these conditions. And Lawrence, too, played well, you know, quite aggressive. In the end, he just got the execution wrong, came down the wicket a bit too early, sort of slightly telegraphed it to the bowler who, you know, dropped it short and got him stumped. But his sort of his proactivity at the crease was good, and Pope was really unlucky the way he got out, sort of slicing it between his legs and caught a short leg. So I thought those two actually shaped up pretty well, and it was just that England didn't get enough runs at the top of the order and then just folded rather meekly at the end.
Yeah, that 30 for 3 problem, it just sets you back, doesn't it? It's very hard to recover against that attack, that relentlessness of that Indian attack, with just a bit happening when you're 30 for 3. Just on Pope and Lawrence, they're two, one dismissal and one non-dismissal. There was one that Pope was out, and as you say, inside edge onto his back leg, and the ball bouncing up at short leg. I don't think I've ever seen that happen before in those circumstances.
No,
it's amazing what the game throws up. And then there was the short leg catch. We thought there was going to be another sort of bizarre short leg catch when Lawrence played it firmly onto the boot of the short leg fielder, and the soft signal was out. It ricocheted to Rishabh Pant, who took the catch. And another one of those sort of tough decisions for the third umpire. It was another one where if you look at it, you think, oh, is the ball on the ground? Has it just hit the toe of his boot? There'll be a lot of people who watched it saying, no, it clearly was on the ground. But I would refer you back to that Tony Gregg video session, the foreshortening, that the ball often looks as though it's on the ground when it's not. Anyway, in a way, you could totally understand the third umpire's decision, Anil Chaudhry, in giving that not out. But it may well have been out, but perhaps he felt that it just wasn't enough certainty despite the soft signal from the umpire. You know, it's just another one of those low catch situations that television is not very good, I think, at clearing up. Television coverage these days is absolutely fantastic at cricket, but it still hasn't worked out how to sort out the low catch, and it still hasn't worked out how to show how fast or otherwise the bowling is. But anyway, those are sort of nitpicking, really, because the TV coverage is generally speaking excellent these days, and we see so much, don't we? It's fantastic. Anyway, there we go then, Yoz. End of the first day. England 205, India 24 for 1. Any hope for England? We started on Groundhog Day at the start. Any hope for England at all in this Test match?
Yeah, why not? These batsmen can make mistakes. I mean, you've got to think as a bowler. And I saw a little bit of swing for Anderson, who bowled immaculately. You know, Leach could get wickets on it as well. I haven't got a lot of confidence in Dominic Best. We've also got our secret weapon, Joe Root, as well. Absolutely. You need 9 good deliveries and we could bowl India out for 240. Why not? I don't think it'll happen, but you've got to go out believing that it might on the following day. I tell you what will be interesting, by the way. Tonight, we've got Marcus Trescothick in the Virtual Cricket Club, who, of course, is going to be the England full-time batting coach from middle of March. I mean, quite interesting to see what impact he can have. Anyway, he's joining us in the Virtual Cricket Club tonight in aid of the Professional Cricketers Trust. And you can be there as well, and you can ask him a direct question as well, because he's sort of leaving his Somerset roots to be full-time with England shortly. So join us in the Virtual Cricket Club, worldsbestcricketclub.com, in aid of the Professional Cricketers Trust. That's tonight at 7 p.m. Join us, because I think that'll be really fascinating. And we'll be reviewing tomorrow's play, the second day of this final Test match in Ahmedabad, at this time as well. So I hope you can join us for one or both of those. Thanks for listening.
Thanks very much for listening. Join us later. Join us tomorrow. Bye for now.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.